ACT Radio is taped and produced at the KTEP studios at the University of Texas at El Paso. The views and opinions expressed on ACT Radio are solely those of its participants and do not necessarily reflect those of KTEP, its staff, or management.
Welcome to Animal Concerns of Texas, ACT Radio. I'm Greg Lawson.
I'm Tom Lenny.
And I'm Liz Walsh.
Here on ACT, we discuss how we humans relate to other animals.
We talk about how we use them for food, clothing, and entertainment, and how there are humane alternatives to these practices.
And we also discuss why a plant-based diet is the healthiest for humans and also the best thing one can do for the environment.
So if you're concerned about the environment, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about the way animals are treated, stay with us for Animal Concerns of Texas.
Coming up on today's show, we feature a conversation with Camilla Fox, executive director and founder of Project Coyote and a wildlife consultant with Animal Welfare Institute. That's a little later in the show, but first some news.
In response to a petition filed by the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation, Wild Earth Guardians, and mayfly expert Dr. William Patrick McCafferty, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service determined that the Gila mayfly, an imperiled aquatic insect, may qualify for protection under the Endangered Species Act. A positive 90-day finding was issued, and the service will now begin a status review of the species. Mayflies are insects that spend the first part of their lives underwater, and they are incredibly sensitive to changes in water quality. This mayfly is known solely from a small area of the Gila River drainage system in Grant County of southwestern New Mexico. A recent scientific status review by the Xerxes Society found that the Gila mayfly is threatened by increased stream sediment and pollution from recreational activities and cattle grazing. The Gila mayfly requires clean, fast-flowing water to survive, yet many streams in the Gila River drainage are on the Clean Water Act list of impaired waters due to high levels of aluminum. Global climate change threatens to alter the hydrology and flow regime of the Gila River, which will further impact this highly sensitive mayfly. Without protection under the Endangered Species Act, this mayfly may go extinct. Conservation actions taken to protect aquatic insects will also benefit other species. For example, protecting a stream that harbors a critically imperiled mayfly by reducing overgrazing or restoring streamside plants will also benefit the fish, amphibians, mammals, and birds that depend on that habitat. According to Dr. McCafferty, the Gila mayfly has a highly restricted range and a remarkable behavior, and considering that the degradation of the Gila River in Arizona and the possible impending degradation of this river system in New Mexico, that constitutes the only known habitat of the Gila mayfly, this species deserves special consideration and protection among the North American aquatic fauna. Taylor Jones of Wild Earth Guardians states that protecting these insects in their critical habitat will safeguard water quality and ensure a healthier future for the myriad other species that depend on these streams for survival.
Poacher snares pose one of the biggest threats to mountain gorilla populations, according to campaigners, and it seems that the gorillas themselves have worked this out because they've been observed dismantling traps. Field staff of the Dian Fossey Gorilla Fund in Rwanda report that they've seen several young gorillas destroying with their hands snares which maim and often kill gorillas. A gorilla program coordinator at the Carasoque Research Center said, "We knew that gorillas do this, but all the reported cases in the past were carried out by adult gorillas, mostly silverbacks. But it was two juveniles and one blackback that worked together to deactivate two snares, and how they did it demonstrated an impressive cognitive skill." Dian Fossey's staff explained that just 2 days previously, a juvenile was caught in a snare, with the rope making severe cuts into her leg, resulting in gangrene. She also dislocated her shoulder as she desperately tried to escape. Fossey Fund staff intervened with vets from the Mountain Gorilla Veterinary Project, but were unable to save her. Hers is the second death this year resulting from a gorilla being caught in a poacher's snare. A Fossey Fund field data coordinator reported that he saw one snare very close to the group. Since the gorillas were moving in that direction, he decided to deactivate it. A silverback called Vuba pig grunted at him, a vocalization of warning, and at the same time, two juveniles, together with a blackback called Totero, ran toward the snare and together pulled the branch used to hold the rope. They saw another snare nearby, and as quickly as before, they destroyed the second branch and pulled the rope out of the ground. A director of the Carasoque Center said, "Our battle to detect and destroy snares from the park is far from over, and the recent death of one of our gorillas has given us all further motivation. Today we can proudly confirm that gorillas are doing their part, too."
Under new rules proposed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, federal inspectors will have one-third of a second to examine slaughtered chickens for contaminants and disease. The proposal would speed up production lines in slaughterhouses by 25% and pull most federal inspectors off the lines and replace them with lower-cost plant workers. The USDA says its proposal is a win-win-win that modernizes food inspection while saving tax dollars and saving money for the poultry industry. But it smells like chicken droppings to me. This plan will probably garner more money for the poultry industry, but at a cost of food safety. Americans who eat an average of 100 pounds of chicken a year will be at a greater risk of getting a larger side serving of feces and cancerous tumors with their chicken. In typical Orwellian doublespeak, Dirk Philpott, spokesman for the USDA, said the changes would ensure and even enhance the safety of the poultry supply by focusing our inspectors' efforts on activities more directly tied to improving food safety. What? The plan would replace 3 out of 4 federal safety inspectors with plant workers in slaughterhouses. It would let those plants decide how much training those workers receive in identifying disease and contamination in a third of a second. The plan would speed up the production line so that the one federal inspector inspects 175 birds per minute instead of the 35 per minute inspected now. The plan would let poultry plants decide what dangerous bacteria they test carcasses for, how often they test, and no longer require plants to test for E. coli. The poultry industry will save at least $250 million a year, and taxpayers will save $30 million a year. That sounds good to me, since I don't eat birds. Stay with us. Coming up next on ACT Radio, we feature a conversation with Camilla Fox of Project Coyote. That's coming up next on ACT Radio.
Now on ACT Radio is Camilla Fox, founder and executive director of Project Coyote and a wildlife consultant with the Animal Welfare Institute. Thanks for joining us, Camilla.
Nice to be with you.
Camilla, can you tell us how you got involved in animal issues in the first place?
Well, I have a long history of animal-related issues in my family. My father actually worked on studying wild canids.
A canid?
Canids. So
canids, yes.
Wolves and foxes and coyotes and also domestic dogs.
Is your last name for real?
It is.
Okay.
And then he actually worked for the Humane Society of the United States for years, and I, from a very young age, just knew that I wanted to devote my life to making this a better world for animals and the planet.
And what triggered you to go vegan?
Well, I've been a vegetarian since I was 6, and then later in life just realized that my consumption of other animal products, dairy and cheese and eggs, was really contradictory to my whole philosophy, and so I've been vegan for about 20 years and
wow.
Very happy for making that change in my life.
Yeah, it is a great change, and you know, that's one thing that once you do make the change, it's like really you have no desire to go back because you just feel at ease, you know, with your decision and feel good about everything that you do. So that's great, Camilla, that you did that. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about Project Coyote?
Sure. So we're a national nonprofit organization, and we're based in Northern California. And we are a coalition of educators and scientists who help people and their domestic animals coexist with coyotes. And we also foster appreciation for the role that coyotes and other native carnivores play in maintaining ecosystem health and species diversity.
Well, coyotes are among the most prosecuted animals in North America, it seems. Can you tell us a little bit about what captured your attention about them and caused you to found an organization dedicated to just helping coyotes?
Yeah, well, first I want to say that coyotes really for us are icon species, so we don't just focus on coyotes. We actually work on predator-related issues across the board, which I can talk more about. But the reason we chose the coyote as our icon is that, as you mentioned, they are the most persecuted native carnivore in North America. And we estimate that at least 500,000 coyotes are killed every year just in the U.S. alone.
How many? 500,000?
Yeah, and that's probably an underestimate.
Oh, man.
That includes federally subsidized predator control and killing by private ranchers, trappers, hunters. They are killed 365 days a year in unlimited numbers in many states. So because of that fact that they are the most persecuted native carnivore in North America, and they're also our iconic song dog. They exist nowhere else other than North America, unlike many of the other wild canids, such as wolves and foxes, which exist on many other continents. So they are our native song dog, and they also are steeped in mythology, Native American mythology and lore, and mm-hmm. many Native American tribes really respected and revered coyotes for their intelligence, their adaptability. They considered them the creator species, the ancestor, and also a trickster. They were a trickster uh-huh. character in many Native American stories. So for all those reasons, we chose the coyote to be our iconic species for the organization, and we truly believe that if we can shift the way that we view and treat coyotes, we can shift the way we view and treat other predators such as wolves and foxes, mountain lions, all the other predators that are also very much persecuted by our federal government.
And it seems like there's a myriad of ways in which they try to go about killing coyotes and other wildlife. I was looking on your website and I saw a few different issues like night hunting in North Carolina and then states trying to set bounties for coyotes. How do they go about trying to kill the coyotes?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it's pretty much, I mean, in many states, it's almost any method you could imagine is used against the coyote. And as you mentioned, bounties, even though we know from decades of scientific research that bounties are ineffective in reducing coyote populations, aside from ethics, they are still being implemented by some states, provinces up in Canada. So, you know, and we even have federal agencies that say that bounties are absolutely counter to ecosystem management. So we're still, you know, employing methods that are ineffective, generally unethical. We use poisons, traps, snares, aerial gunning against coyotes. And yet we know that that they're not effective in terms of reduction of populations or in mitigating conflicts.
As I understand it, in the 100 years that the USDA has been killing coyotes, they've actually expanded their range by about a third, and they're becoming more populous. The more they kill, the more there are. Tell us a little bit more about the USDA's Wildlife Services Program.
Well, this is a program that functions under the Animal Damage Control Act, and that's an act that was passed by Congress in 1931 and essentially authorized the Secretary of Agriculture to promulgate any method deemed necessary to control predators and animals deemed a pest to agriculture. And how that's translated since 1931 is that every year approximately 4 to 5 million animals are killed by this agency, and there are about 100,000 native carnivores that are killed by wildlife services. And this is largely at the behest of ranchers, ostensibly to mitigate conflicts between predators and livestock. But what we know, as I mentioned before, we know through, you know, much of the scientific research that the methods employed, the practices, protocols, are ineffective, certainly ethically questionable. Yes, I'm trying to be tactful here.
don't be tactful. Barbaric.
Yes, barbaric. And especially when you look at some of the methods, such as, you know, poisons and snares, leg hole traps.
Denning,
aerial gunning. I mean, these methods have been employed for, you know, 200 or so years, many of them in the U.S., and yet many countries have banned them, such as the leg hold trap. At least 88 countries have severely restricted or prohibited leg hold traps, and yet our federal government employs more leg hold traps than any other country that we know of.
And so, as I understand it, Wildlife Services accidentally kills about 1,000 domestic dogs a year with poison and traps?
Yeah, and many of these aspects of this federal agency were revealed in a four-part series by investigative reporter named Tom Knudsen with the Sacramento Bee. And I encourage your listeners to check out this series because it's probably the best investigative journalism piece looking in depth at this agency.
And it can be found by Googling for Wildlife Services Sacramento Bee.
Or they can go onto our website, which is projectcoyote.org, and we have all the articles.
All the links.
There.
Oh, great, great.
Yeah, it seems like it was such a much needed piece, and it's hard to believe that it's gone on as long without this, because it's definitely a broad issue. You have, you know, it's not just for people who care about coyotes. It's about the ecosystem, and it's about people and, you know, the lives that are affected. Either people are poisoned by the cyanide, the lives that have lost in the aerial gunning practices, and the habitat destruction. So I'm just amazed that it's taken this long to get such a great piece about this kind of this problem.
Well, it reveals that aspect reveals just how secretive this agency has been. And even though it's taxpayer subsidized, you and I underwrite all of this killing, it has remained largely unknown to the public and even members of Congress. And that's what we've really found with the series of articles, that not only does the public not know about this agency and what it does, but many of our members of Congress and then even local politicians who ultimately also fund this agency through county contracts with the federal government are largely unaware of its existence and what it actually does in the field.
Well, part of this is probably because of the name change that the agency underwent. I don't remember exactly when that was, but it used to be called the USDA's Animal Damage Control.
Well, they've gone by many names. They've been rodent and predator control. They go back and forth from the Department of the Interior to the Department of Agriculture. They're really like men in black.
That's a good way of describing it. And you know, you look at some of what Tom Knudsen with the Sacramento Bee, some of the issues that he dug up through FOIAs, through interviews with former Wildlife Services employees, and it's just unbelievable. I mean, he opens the series with a former Wildlife Services employee who was essentially told, after he found an endangered golden eagle in one of his traps, to what's called SSS, which is known as shoot, shovel, and shut up. And that was by his boss.
Yeah.
And that just gives you one little glimpse into this agency and what actually happens out in the field. And that's the scary part, is when these essentially landmines for wildlife, landmines for any animals, and that's traps and snares and poison baits, when these brutal tools are used out in the wild, we have no idea what their consequences are in terms of non-target take, in terms of environmental consequences. And, you know, these articles reveal just the tip of the iceberg of some of the things that have come to light.
I also remember in that article the former Wildlife Services employee saying that the policy, as told to him by his boss, was that if you kill a domestic dog, bury it and throw away the collar.
Right, right.
Well, that's one other point. You know, the traps aren't just out in, quote, the wild, but they can be quite close to housing developments, to trails the public goes on into wildlife areas. I mean, it's not like they're out in very remote wilderness areas. They're pretty much scattered across the landscape wherever predators might be found.
And that's one of the concerns, is, you know, just how these devices, these various tools are being used, what kinds of threats they pose to non-target animals. And, of course, that's not to say that it's justified for the ostensibly target animals. And those target animals include everything from coyotes, bears, mountain lions, foxes, bobcats, wolves.
Badgers, even.
Badgers. One of the things, I'll mention here in Marin County, which is where Project Coyote is based, we had quite a bit of controversy around this agency in our county back in 1996. Marin County was going to be one of three Northern California counties that Wildlife Services was going to test the use of Compound 1080, which is a deadly, deadly poison with no antidote, developed in Nazi Germany originally as a rodenticide and then soon learned to be a very effective killer of particularly canids, dogs, wolves, foxes, coyotes. So it was soon employed by USDA Wildlife Services in the U.S. as a predator control tool, first used as bait. So they would take Compound 1080 and use it in carcasses of dead cows, sheep, and they'd literally lace these carcasses with the poison, put it out on the range, and of course the poison would kill whatever animal came up and consume that and scavenge that bait. Ultimately, the Nixon administration, because of the large non-target kill, they banned Compound 1080. And so in 1972, because of the wide-scale killing of non-target animals, including many species that subsequently became listed under the Endangered Species Act, The Nixon administration banned Compound 1080 and sodium cyanide, two poisons that were being used by the federal government in this predator control program. Years later, the Reagan administration reauthorized the use of poisons for predator control and specifically authorized Compound 1080 to be used in what's called a livestock protection collar. So in Marin County in 1996, Marin was going to be one of three counties to test these collars. And this is a community abutting San Francisco, so it's quite a community that cares about wildlife, cares about the environment, and agriculture is also an important component of the community. So because of that, and when we learned about the testing of this poison, there was a huge outcry, and it led to us learning about Wildlife Services' other activities in the county, which is essentially how the agency functions throughout the West, where they contract with a county to essentially pay a federal trapper to go out and trap and poison an aerial gun, all sorts of predators, largely, as I mentioned, at the behest of private ranchers. So when we learned of this in Marin County, we met with our Board of Supervisors, we met with our County Department of Ag, and what we learned was our local politicians were largely unaware of this agency functioning in Marin County. And this is very similar to what Tom Knudsen's articles revealed in Sacramento Bee. And ultimately, what our county decided was to sever its contract with Wildlife Services and to instead adopt a non-lethal program. And I'll say, even before severing that contract, they tried to work out a compromise with the federal agency to say, you know what, our community does not want you using poisons in Marin County. We don't want you denning, which is essentially the killing of small coyote and fox pups.
By pouring flammable liquids down into the den?
That's the way they used to do it. Ostensibly, they don't use flammables anymore. They use something called sodium nitrate. But it's still, enormously inhumane, unjustifiable, ineffective.
Yeah.
And our county said, we don't want that. And Wildlife Services came back and essentially said, we want our whole toolkit. So it was very revealing that this agency was not willing to work with the community's concerns around these issues. And that's essentially when our Board of Supervisors said, okay, then we're not going to contract with you. And that's when we helped work with our County Department of Ag and develop an alternative program that essentially took the money that went to pay that federal trapper and instead applies it to a cost-share program, which actually assists ranchers with implementing non-lethal animal husbandry methods, such as guard dogs, llamas, fencing.
And llamas?
Llamas,
what
yeah.
What do llamas do?
Llamas are they're actually a very effective guard animal, so they, particularly with sheep, and they bond with the sheep, and they will get very aggressive towards coyotes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing to see in action.
Camilla, I understand that there congressmen have called for a congressional investigation of this agency, and Peter DeFazio has reintroduced his bill to ban the poisons. Are you hopeful that any of this will take place?
Yeah, so Peter DeFazio and John Campbell, who's a Republican from California, have both co-sponsored a bill. It's H.R. 4214, and it's known as the Compound 1080 and M44 Elimination Act. And essentially it would do just that. It would eliminate these two types of poisons that are used to kill coyotes and other predators by our federal government. Your question about whether it has traction, it's very difficult, I will say, particularly in this Congress.
So we have to urge all our listeners to contact their congressional representative and tell them to support H.R. 4214, is that
yes.
right?
Okay. Yes, to both support and co-sponsor, and they can find actually our action alert on Project Coyote's website on our homepage.
Well, Camilla, you know, more and more of the public, as they become aware of these practices, most people don't approve of the use of these devices that are so horrific in how they kill animals. One of the things that we've recently seen is the Sierra Club, one of the largest environmental organizations in the country, has recently implemented a policy where they don't support the use of these body gripping devices on public lands. Do you think this will have any impact, and how can we help better educate the public at large on this issue?
I do think it will have an impact, and I think it's fantastic that the Sierra Club took a strong stand against body gripping traps, and of course that includes snares and leg hole traps, conibear kill traps. And it's important that conservation groups take a strong stand against these indiscriminate methods that we know are ineffective and really ethically unjustifiable. So, you know, I give kudos to Sierra Club for having done this, and I think it will have a strong impact on the ground because it does provide direction to Sierra Club's chapters and activists to be able to take a strong stand when there's, for instance, state legislation or a local ordinance about trapping. Well, and, you know, it's in line with global thinking on this. As I mentioned earlier, at least 88 countries have prohibited leg hole traps, and that includes the European Union that has deemed leg hole traps to be inhumane and unacceptable. So we need to start pressuring our federal government to follow the lead of other countries and to start getting away from methods that we know are indiscriminate and ineffective.
And Camilla, can you remind our listeners again of your website so they can go and check out and see how they can get involved?
Absolutely. It's projectcoyote.org, O-R-G.
Great. We've been talking with Camilla Fox, Executive Director and Founder of Project Coyote. We really appreciate you taking the time to be with us on the show, Camilla.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to be with you.
Thanks, Camilla.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I urge all of you to go to projectcoyote.org and read the articles from the Sacramento Bee, which expose wildlife services, and contact your congressional representative and tell them to support H.R. 4214 to outlaw the poisons used by wildlife services. Heck, go so far as to tell them to defund wildlife services. Let's dismantle that place once and for all.
And if you'd like more information about a vegetarian or vegan diet, you can go to the Vegetarian Society of El Paso website at vsep.org.
And if you'd like to listen to past shows of Animal Concerns of Texas, go to ktep.org and click on the Listen to Past Shows. I'm Liz Walsh.
I'm Greg Lawson.
And I'm Tom Linney.
For the animals, the earth, and a healthier humanity, thanks for listening to Animal Concerns of Texas.